Single Greatest Choice podcast, where we dive into the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and choice. I'm your host, Katie B. Every episode, I'll deliver conversations with women in their fertile years who are grappling with what to do when life doesn't turn out as planned. You will also hear interviews with experts in the fields of fertility, personal development, choosing single motherhood, and more. Join us as we explore these topics and support each other along the way. Because what you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. Thanks for tuning in to episode 4 of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I cannot tell you how much fun it's been for me to have these conversations. Part of my purpose in creating this podcast is to bring you a wide variety of stories from women in all stages of life and motherhood. I want you to feel the expansiveness of the choices that are available to you and the different ways women have handled the big questions we talk about on this show. But I think there's so much value too in hearing just how similar some of our stories are. Today's guest on the podcast is Gloria. As I spoke with Gloria about how she's responding to the pull of the biological clock, I couldn't help but be reminded of our guest Chelsea in episode 3. The way I'm structuring these conversations means that I know very little about these ladies before we get on the phone, and you're really hearing our very first conversation. I found it remarkable how many of the same topics, the same worries, the same frustrations, and the same desires came up in many of the conversations I've been having. I decided to put these two episodes back to back in hopes that if you resonate with these stories, you will start to feel a little less alone. I know that hearing Gloria talk from her heart will be meaningful for so many. So let's get to it. Hi, Gloria. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Single Greatest Choice podcast. Will you start out by just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm 30 years old. I'm single. I am a social worker as a profession. I've always just had a really strong passion in this field of helping others, and family has always been a really important thing to me ever since I was very little. And I think I've just always had a strong passion for travel, family, culture, food. I love being active and outdoors. Those are just a couple of different things that kind of touch upon my interests.
And you're thinking about becoming a mom.
I am. Yes.
You're a little on the younger side. So I'm curious in terms of women who are making this choice, you're on the younger end of the spectrum. So I'm curious to hear what got you thinking about this or kind of leading you to this decision at this point in your life.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that I'm on the younger side. I mean, I definitely do acknowledge that I think in the spectrum, obviously, right, of parenthood and motherhood and women conceiving, I think that, yes, I am younger to be starting maybe this journey, especially maybe deciding that, you know, that I'm not going to wait to find Mr. Right until I start having a family. And I think for me, part of the like journey into kind of choosing going down this route is I had a pretty significant loss when I was 25. My dad died pretty suddenly. And I think that just changed my perspective on the world. You know, when you lose someone so close to you, your just like way of seeing the world is a very different way. And family has always been a really important part of my life. I've always known that I was going to have children. I think from the time that I was probably 3 years old, I was carrying around dolls and like, I loved dolls. I've always had this like very nurturing side to me. I always wanted to care for children, and that's never gone away. And in fact, I think like when I hit 30, it was like, oh, wow. That biological clock, which again, I know I am still young, but it felt like, oh my gosh, what is going on here? Like, right. I feel this urgency that, I mean, it had definitely been present in my 20s, but I think when I hit 30, it was this very different. I really want to make motherhood happen. And for a period of time, as I was approaching 30, I kind of felt like this sense of really like sadness and loss again, because I was wondering why I haven't met the right partner. Mm-hmm. And did I do something wrong to not make these dreams kind of attainable? And of course, you see all of your friends partnered at this age and getting married, right, starting families, and it wasn't happening for me. And it feels like a loss again, like there's something wrong with you, you know, that you're not fitting into the societal expectations. And then I don't know. I think it was actually October of last year. This was probably like a month after I turned 30. I started just researching. I went on Instagram and put in single moms. And then like I saw that there was this single mom by choice community. And then I like started Googling it. And I just like got into this whole realm of, I didn't realize there was actually a huge community of women out there that were choosing to be parents, you know, and choosing this journey that is probably, you know, not the conventional journey that a lot of people choose, right?
It's not, but you know, it's interesting to hear you, how you happened upon the community, because I think that many of us have had that experience of, am I crazy? Am I the only person who's ever considered doing this? And then all of a sudden you open up this world of not just people who are doing it, but women who are smart and successful and attractive and funny and, you know, all the things. And you realize, okay, this isn't like this big loser category that I got dumped into. These are, these are amazing women who have chosen not to settle. And there's so many common themes in everything that you just shared. Something that's really standing out to me, you talking about losing your father, and I'm so sorry for that loss. I just can't imagine going through that. But that, I've only done a handful of interviews so far, and that has come up in every interview thus far. Women who have some sort of experience recognizing the mortality of their own parents and realizing that maybe I'm not going to share this experience from the get-go with a partner, but I do want to share it with my family, whatever my family looks like.
Yeah.
And, our guest in episode number 3 talked about also losing her dad and being an only child and wanting to do this while her mother was able to be a part of it with her. And I also had a situation where my dad had a heart attack, and that really, really more than my age, it was thinking about my parents who are young and healthy and I want them to be young and healthy while they play with their grandkid, you know? And so, that's one of those things that you don't think about it until you do. And then all of a sudden it's like the clock starts ticking.
Yeah.
Not just for us, but our parents.
Exactly. And I don't know, I think loss does play into definitely a part of my narrative of why maybe now versus, you know, probably my narrative might look very different if I had both parents living, but I don't think it's a bad thing either. You know, that I've chosen this, I have shared this openly with my mom. I think at first it was hard for her. You know, there's still like negative connotations, right, about single mothers. And I think it's changing, but I do think still there are these negative connotations about single motherhood and why would someone choose that? It's best for kids to grow up in two-parent households and whatnot. But I think that that construct, I hope, is changing. And for my child, I think the way I'm going to describe family is that family is not just blood at the end of the day. Family is who we choose to have as our family. And yes, it is where we're born into, but it's so much more than that. And I don't know, I think that we can create our own families and that can look really beautiful in many different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about where you are in the process right now.
So a good question. Well, with this whole pandemic.
Yes, we're recording in March of 2020. So we do have a pandemic on.
Yes, we do. And so with everything that's gone on, I was advised by my gynecologist that I should just go to a reproductive endocrinologist, I think is what they're called, RE. I did some research. I found one that I had really heard good things about. And I went through that process, did all the blood work. And they're like, all right, we're ready to go. Let's start your IUI in March. And then this pandemic happened. And they're like, oh, just kidding. We're stopping everything. And we're really sorry, but this isn't going to happen this month. So I was, of course, pretty devastated. You know, I think as a lot of women are right now throughout the world, I actually have been a part of different Facebook communities and women in England and Europe and all these different, you know, like all these different areas are impacted by this. So,
and when you say you're feeling devastated, what is it? Is it just the having to wait? How are you? Tell us more about how you're feeling.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good question. So when I got the news, it was actually last week. I was kind of waiting because my clinic was just waiting to see, you know, how things unfolded. I think because they were so overwhelmed with everything, I got a message. We're really sorry, but we're closing down our clinic. We're not starting any new treatments at this time. Please call again next month. I had really planned about this was going to be the month. And I think I had just feeling really positive, you know, this was kind of the start. Starting this journey towards becoming a mom. And this, of course, has to fall upon the whole time. I mean, my father's death of his anniversary is in April. So it was just like all these different feelings of loss was just kind of like culminating and coming together. And I don't have control over any of this, right? If I were partnered right now, I could probably be proactively trying to conceive and, you know, in the midst of this pandemic that's going on. And I mean, I've seen all these jokes about, oh, there's going to be all these babies born in the next 9 months because everyone's stuck inside. And I'm like, great. I'm happy for all those other people out there who are having babies in the next 9 months. Right. But I feel like everything kind of got put on hold. But I did some research and I mean, my clinic had always said, we're going to do IUIs in the office. And they never said that doing in-home insemination would ever be an option because they just really like to kind of monitor things. And I get that. And I respected that. But then I was looking at like other ways that you could do, obviously, which is in-home inseminations. And the sperm bank that I was planning on using had sent me a couple emails over the last week saying, you can still do at-home inseminations during this social distancing period.
And wow.
So I know, which I was kind of surprised about. So I actually ended up following up with my RE and I was like, what would you think about home insemination right now? They were like, well, we can't advise, you know, about like at home and insemination, which I said, I understand, but would you sign a consent that I could do it? They said, sure, send it over.
Wow. So are you going to do it?
Funny you asked that. Yesterday, I was like literally contemplating all day about like whether or not I was going to have this sperm shipped to my house. And I like literally spent like the day, I was like in deep contemplation. I'm like, okay, people are going to think I'm crazy for doing this.
Right.
I was also kind of still trying to figure out my like timing with ovulation because the whole thing with IUI process is you have to have exact perfect timing. Mm-hmm. So I decided I'm going to wait this month because I was just with everything being as stressful as it is with the whole world kind of in this pandemic, I'd rather just wait, you know, now that I know that my clinic would support essentially that if next month the clinic still wasn't open, that I could do an at-home insemination, that I might try that.
That's good information, you know. But it's nice to have in your back pocket, but I totally understand. I think I would be afraid that I would mess it up.
That's what I was kind of
afraid
of.
Wasting money and, you know, it does definitely add up.
Sperm is not cheap. It's not a cheap thing to buy. And so it's one shot you get. And I was like, you'd rather wait and see what next month will bring. And we'll go from there.
Yeah, but that was a big shocker to me, how incredibly expensive the sperm is. I'm like, I hope don't know that this is the going rate because we don't need them to be even more full of themselves. But
I know. It's kind of crazy. And I don't know, like talk about like a whole process. The most overwhelming process to me was choosing a sperm donor.
Yes. Okay. Tell us about that.
I like still don't know how women feel like fully confident making the decision because I'm going to be like fully honest that at the end of the day, you know, like I feel good about the sperm donor that I've chosen. I just feel like it's so overwhelming. Like there are all these sperm banks out there. And yeah, like you can do some preliminary research, like how to choose a good sperm donor. And like, it's just really hard. I signed up for like all access pass so that I could like get information.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the things that were most important to you? Like what were the first boxes you were looking at?
Good question. So, well, one of the things that came up with my RE doctor, which I still like, it was kind of interesting because I didn't even, obviously wasn't aware of this until I went through like the blood test, but the whole CMV, cytomegalovirus testing. So that was like something that like my RE doctor said that you should be like conscious of when you're choosing a sperm donor because I guess there are more risks for women if they like do an IUI with someone who has CMV like positive versus CMV negative.
Right. I think it's if you're positive, then the donor can be positive or negative.
Right. But if you're negative,
then you need a negative donor. Yes. And it really narrows down the pool.
Exactly. So of course I happen to be CMV negative. And so again, like the doctor was like, well, honestly, it's going to make your decision a lot easier. And ultimately, like in a way he was right, because it has made my decisions a little bit easier. But in terms of like when I started doing the research and when I started thinking about, okay, like what am I really looking for in this process? I think for me, characteristics obviously were important. I just really wanted someone who was described as, you know, someone who's really kind, compassionate, you know, has this sense of adventure like me. And I think shares, you know, like similar kind of values and characteristics. And I think the other thing that I was thinking about, because I've always been I've always had an affinity to Chinese culture. So a little backstory is that from the time when I was a little girl, my best friend growing up was Chinese, half Chinese actually. And I like loved everything about like Chinese culture. And I really, even in high school, decided that that was a language I really wanted to learn. I got really involved in this program that allowed me essentially to go to China for the summer and really learn in depth about Chinese culture. And from then, I actually, like, that was my focus in college was East Asian studies. And so I, again, like, really focused on learning the language and ended up living abroad in China after and taking on a job in China. So I think I feel like a very close affinity and very close connection to that culture. And I think I actually always considered adopting a child from China. It was something that like for me, I've kind of just always been like, that's going to be a part of my narrative.
Did that really narrow down the choices of donors? Like, how many Chinese donors are there?
Not a whole lot. Yeah.
That's what I figured. Question. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially with the sperm bank that I was looking at, they didn't have a huge selection of donors to begin with. One of the other huge criteria for me, actually, that I didn't mention, which has been really important for me, was whether they were an open ID donor. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I need to explain that or not.
No, I think Katie, most listeners may know what that is. The open ID is that when the child turns 18, they'll be able to have some contact, or at least be able to reach out and try to contact the donor.
Yeah, and I think, exactly.
Yeah, the more women I talk to that are currently going through this process, the advice really is to only look towards those open ID donors. And in fact, many banks are doing away with anonymous donors simply because
I think that's good.
Yeah, there's really no way for them to stay anonymous. So my thought was not that my child wouldn't be able to contact an anonymous donor, but that my child would be able to track that donor down and the donor would not be receptive. So I think as banks are realizing there's really no way to keep donors anonymous, they're making it so where, you know, everyone has to kind of consent to be contacted at some point.
Yeah. I think that's really good too, in a way. I think to me, it's kind of like how adoption looks today in our, at least in the US, mm-hmm. that like mm-hmm. adoption is very open, you know, like, mm-hmm. so yeah, I think that was like very important to me because I mean, this journey to becoming a single mom and how I've come to this place and when I explain it to my child, it's not going to be something I'm secretive about. Like, I'm going to be very open with them about this whole process and everything that kind of led me to choosing this path. So,
yeah. And it's amazing. It's amazing that you are considering a donor outside of your own race, but that you will be able to share that culture, because I think that's oftentimes the drawback to choosing, and I considered donors outside of my own race. And then I thought, is that really fair to them if I'm choosing a minority donor? And then I'm a white woman who has had that experience moving through the world. And So that would be difficult, I think, to not share that with my child. But in your case, it sounds like you really do have a lot of input with sharing. I mean, you've experienced the culture in that country. You know some of the language. You have this deep love. And so in that case, it would be something that you and your child share together, just that exploration of culture. I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, well, I hope so. I mean, I will say that, like, it's definitely been something that I've thought a lot about because, you know, at the end of the day, like a lot of the women that I've connected with who have chosen, you know, this journey and done it like a donor selection have chosen someone that looks like them, right? Like, mm-hmm. and so that their child is going to kind of have those similar characteristics. And here I am going into it and I'm like, I'm okay with the fact that my child is not going to necessarily look like me. I mean, I like say to myself at the end of the day, I think even with a child, even with a sperm donor that's going to have a different race than me, I'm sure, you know, I have to believe that there are going to be some characteristics.
Right. You're 50%
that are still.
Right.
Exactly. That's what I'm telling myself.
Right.
But, you know, it is a huge consideration. And I am definitely not, you know, going into this blindsided in the sense that, like, I know, like, I am choosing a path. This is going to present maybe additional layers of challenge for this child because here it is, like, I'm, you know, a white woman and I'm going to be raising a multiracial child. And I know very well, like, I've grown up in a kind of a more rural area. And so, like, I know very well that I'm going to have to continue to advocate for that child. Right. And that they are going to experience racism. That's unfortunate, like the reality that our society does exist in. If you look different, and then of course, then you add the layer of you look different, and then you also just have one parent, they're probably going to experience, you know, challenges. But I guess for me, that's not enough of a reason to say I shouldn't be doing that, that I should just be choosing another white sperm donor because it's going to be easier. But I totally understand why someone, you know, would want that, finding someone who has the same similar features. Like, I think either way, like, there's no wrong or right choice here, right?
Right. I think the most important thing is that you just have to feel like it's the right choice for you and not necessarily, you know, compare your decision process to someone else's decision process. For me, at first, I really did think it was important for my child. It didn't matter to me what my child looked mm-hmm. like or what race they were or anything like that. But I thought that for the child, it might be easier identity-wise if the kid looked like me. And so I mm-hmm. imagined holding my child up in the mirror and them seeing that they look not just like me, but also like my dad and my mom and my siblings. And so the first two donors I chose looked very much like they could have been my brother. And not at all mm-hmm. like someone I would have ever dated, you know, but that just seemed like what I should have been doing. And I think about how, you know, the third and the donor that will be the donor does not look like me. I mean, he's the same race, mm-hmm. but coloring and eye color, and, you know, height, all the things, hair color, it's all different.
Yeah.
And that ultimately to me felt like the right donor because I wasn't focused on his outward appearance. I mean, he's cute. Right. His baby pictures are adorable, but it was really, like you said earlier, it was the kindness. It was the consideration that he put into what he wrote. And it was the way he described his relationship with his parents and how he chose his life path in terms of his career and things like that. And I just thought I'd so much rather my kid connect, if they do connect, choose to connect with the donor down the road, connect with just a good human than someone that looks like they could be related, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. Definitely.
So we'll see. I'm going to have a grab bag kid. I have no idea, like, hair color, eye color. Like, we'll see what happens. We'll see which genes are the strongest.
I'm with you there. I won't know at all what mine's going to look like. So
do you worry at all, or is it troublesome to you that if your child does have stronger Chinese features and characteristics that people would assume that your child is adopted?
It's a good question.
I ask because I have a friend who, a friend who's white and married to a Korean man, and all of her children look very Korean. And she'll get the question. People will ask, "Where did you get them?" And she's like, "Do you want the details? Like, they came from my body. I don't know what to tell you."
I mean, honestly, I kind of really hope that my child will look really Chinese, which I know sounds kind of funny, but like, I don't know. Like, for me, it's not, Yeah, I guess I don't really worry that like people are going to think, I mean, in fact, if people want to think that they're adopted, fine. Like they can think that, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I will. If my child does look more Chinese, I'll get the question, oh, did you adopt? Like, did you adopt your child? And I think that's something that like, I mean, I'm sure I'll have different feelings about it when I'm actually going through it. But like, for me, it's more like people are always going to be curious, right? Like, mm-hmm. especially when things look different or when people look different.
Yeah. It gives you an opportunity to enlighten them a bit.
Hope so. I mean, that's kind of I hope that people will be, you know, that I can inform people more, that we shouldn't just be making assumptions about people based on their appearances. But I know, I mean, I think the reality is, like, I think the biggest fear I have, and like, I do like just question myself, you know, this is my choice going to hurt, you know, my child, because I'm choosing, you know, I do have the power, right, to choose here. Like, I could choose a white sperm donor, and that could be very much like easier for this
and
child.
And then your kid will have some other thing that will be the reason why. I think something that brings me so much comfort is that I think back to my very comfortable, like, middle class upbringing, where I had mom and dad and sisters, and bills were always paid, you know, food always on the table, everything was picture perfect. Yeah. And I still managed in my kind of preteen, teenage years to be angsty and like come up with the reasons why my life was terrible. And I just think, you know, every kid is going to have some way that you ruined their life. Like, they're going to tell you about it at some point.
This is true.
So we're just making guesses at how we're going to ruin our kids' lives, but we don't know. We don't know. They'll come up with something, I'm sure.
You are right about that. I think that's the thing. You know, at the end of the day, kids are going to go through heartaches, right? We all do. That's part of life. It's part of being human.
The human experience. So, have you already purchased your vials of sperm?
No, I'm like, again, I'm kind of waiting to do that until I'm like ready to go, because I'm like, all these unknowns right now. I'm waiting.
And do you know, is there like a decent number of vials available? Because that's the other thing. Sometimes they run out.
I know. So that's, I've been like, I literally check every day to make sure.
And you can, depending on the bank, you can purchase them and have them in storage there. So,
well, that's what they said to me. And right now with this whole COVID-19, all of the sperm banks that like are offering like 6 months of free storage, because you know, with everything, which I think is good, you know, I appreciate that they're doing that. So it's been like one of those things, like I said, as I mentioned, the biggest and hardest process to all of this has been like choosing the sperm donor.
And that's why I'm worried. I'm like, I don't want him to run out, because you have put so much thought into it. And
I know.
It's really hard
that's
to start
I'm
over.
Kind of like, maybe I should just, you know, go for it, and probably should just do it. And it's like, I will, but I think it's just been all of this, like the unknowns. Yeah. I was going to do it and just have it sent to my clinic right away. And that was kind of my original plan, but we'll see.
It's a huge step. Yeah.
It means I'm really in it. I think that's the thing. I'm like, oh wow, once I do that, this is it. This is real.
Have you had any dates where you've disclosed that you're thinking about this?
The dating world. I think the one thing, like, I was in a pretty serious relationship that actually was leading towards marriage. I was engaged, and I ended things. I mean, we ended things on a mutual like decision, but I think after that, like, I took some time. It was 2 years ago. And so I was wanting to take some time just to kind of figure out, okay, like, what do I want for myself? And then, of course, I've pretty much shortly after I ended things with that relationship, I started that whole like online world of dating, which is a crazy world to begin with. I sometimes question myself every day if I want to just delete all of these dating apps, because I find them to be like huge time wasters. But at the same time, I'm like, why not? You've got nothing to lose. And
so have you told this might be happening?
No, I haven't gotten the courage to say it yet. I've thought about it, and I've like thought about how I'm going to say it, because I should probably bring it up, but I haven't like actively said, hey, just so you know, I'm planning on having a baby probably actually get pregnant within the next couple of months. What do you think about that? I just don't know what to say. Like, because at the same time, I'm like, well, it's not, I'm not really looking for their permission. So right. I'm more like kind of just looking to see what kind of reaction that they would have.
Yeah. So I've heard women talk about in the dating world that men kind of have one of two reactions. Either they're not into it, which is understandable. I mean, I don't, I've tried to put myself in their shoes. Like if I met a guy and he was like, oh, by the way, I'm trying to have a kid on my own, I don't think I would be down for that either. So right. I get that. But then the other response that I find really interesting is men who get sort of competitive about it. Like all of a sudden they want to be the donor, or they want to like, they're not actually offering to be the donor, but they sort of want to like be the one to convince you, like to derail your plan. I find that really interesting.
Yeah, it is. And again, for me, I guess like sharing that with someone that I was dating, I think I would definitely share it. It wouldn't be something I'd share on a first date. It would be something that I'd probably share like as I got to know the guy more and was like, okay, this is leading to something more serious. And maybe this is selfish of me to say, but I don't think I'm going to like let like someone else's reaction change the way I'm going about plans with moving towards becoming a mom.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was going to ask you that exact question because for me, I feel the same way, but only because when I think about my age and the timeline, being 38, I don't want to have a baby with someone that I've known for a year or less. And I don't want to wait longer than a year at my age to have a child. So it's sort of just naturally, you know, the clock really did run out. So it's interesting to hear you because you probably do have time. But the sense is there that, nope, you're ready. This is the plan. And you're not really wanting someone to derail that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously would I love to meet my lifelong partner and like, you know, magically have something happen? Yes. But I guess that would change things. But I think for me, I've been so focused on this path to motherhood that I've also kind of put dating on the side and have been like, okay, I'm going to focus on me becoming a mom. I'll let dating happen if it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that part of the reason why I chose the title, The Single Greatest Choice, is because all of the other things that are so important to us with career and relationships and where we live and how we live, like all of those things, we have the rest of our lives to figure out. And you can change them as many times as you want. And being a mother is kind of the most permanent thing that we can choose. And it's one of the only things I can think of that really is time bound. At some point, it is no longer biologically a possibility. So whether you're like me and you're kind of up against the end of that runway, or whether like you likely have some time to figure it out, it still is, you know, once you've made that choice, it is the biggest choice you'll ever make. And it feels really good for me to have some solidity around this is what I'm doing and this is how I'm doing it. And yes, I would love to find my partner, but I feel like almost it would be problematic for someone to come in right now because I feel so clear and so certain, and I don't really want to be interrupted. Meet me in a year and I'll have a really cute baby and you can love on that baby and we'll, you know, go get a drink or whatever. I'll be able to drink again. I think there's no reason why it needs to be love, marriage, baby, carriage. You know, we've been fed that our whole life, and I think that there's so much freedom in, oh, I can do this in whatever order makes sense for me. Okay. So you had kind of said you talked to your mom, or you've told your mom that you're going to do this. How has it been with other people? Like, have you shared this with other people in your life, and what has their response been?
Yeah. So good question. I mean, I think like the first person when I thought about doing this, I told my mom. She's definitely been a huge support for me, and I just like, she's one of my best friends. So I've just pretty much share everything with her. And I then kind of started to slowly like share it with, well, I have two siblings, so I shared it with both of them, and they have had different reactions. I think like my younger brother was kind of like, why are you rushing into this? You know, why not wait? Kind of that whole like question where I think a lot of people probably wonder like, well, why are you rushing into this when you're just 30? You know, you have plenty of time. And my sister, who's 3 years older than me, I think she's also wanting to have a baby, and she doesn't have kids herself yet, but she is partnered. And I think she also was at first kind of like, why don't you just want to wait and try to find someone? I feel like at first it wasn't a whole ton of support from my siblings in terms of why I was doing this now. It was just like, why now? Like, why don't you just wait? Don't you think you're being kind of impatient about this process? And I guess my like whole response to that has been, well, it wasn't like I just woke up and realized I wanted to be a parent. I've known I wanted to be a mom my whole life. So I think it was hard for me to hear some of like not fully supportive responses, because it was, you know, I really value my family's opinion. And I think even my mom, when she first heard it, you know, I think she didn't think I was like fully serious about it. And then when I like went through and started like going to the RE and really like was like, all right, I'm going to do this, I think that kind of shocked her. But then she was like all on board, and she was like buying me all these books about like fertility foods and like the baby's brain and development. And so like, I think she definitely came around to supporting me. And I think my siblings have too, in their own way. And like, I don't have any fears. Like, I mean, once, you know, like I'm officially pregnant, you know, everyone's going to be on board. I have shared it with a couple of close friends too. And again, like, I think for my close friends who know me, they're not surprised at all. I've always, you know, shared with them, like, you know, this is something like being a mom, having children is something I've always wanted.
Do most of your friends have kids at this point? Or is it?
So, no, actually, I would say like I have one friend from college who has a kid, but I would say like most of my friends actually don't have kids at this point. So I think, you know, that's also kind of a little bit of a different narrative, like where I'm like, you know, and a lot of my friends, close friends that I've shared it with are partnered and they don't have kids. So like, that's a different perspective too, to share it with someone who's kind of in a different place. But mostly one of my best friends that I went to college with, who's actually like been very sure from the start that she does not want children, she's been like actually one of the most incredibly supportive people. I'm not surprised, but
I've kind of found that like, too. I have several friends in their late 30s, early 40s who are like never had kids and are now at a point where they're like, it's not going to happen for me and I'm fine with it. And they do tend to be the cheerleaders and the ones that are like, I'm going to be kind of the auntie to your child, live vicariously.
Yeah. That's what my best friend said too. She's like, oh my gosh, I'm just like so excited to be your child's auntie and like love your child and, you know, not do the whole full-time parenting thing.
Yes. It's like when your friend gets a puppy or a boat, you know, you're like, I'm glad I don't have to take care of that, but I'm really glad you have it.
Yes, exactly.
What do you think life will look like after you have a baby? Like, have you thought through childcare and living situation and all of that?
Yeah. So I have been thinking about that more, because that's the responsible adult thing to do, right? So I actually right now live with my mom. I kind of have a perfect setup in the sense that like, and I mean, I could move to a different place, but I kind of had a like, long story short, I did a hiatus and like last year decided, I think I was like needing some different change. So I quit my job, my previous job, and went on like this total like backpacking journey across Southeast Asia to kind of just like maybe get all the travel like jitters out of me. And just,
that's a good thing to do before you become a mom.
Was. I think so. I think it was good because I got the travel bug out and I was like, okay, that I needed that. So I did that and I came back and then I was not really sure where I was going to live. So I moved back. I live with my mom. And so I think like for now, when I've been thinking about, you know, trying to conceive, getting pregnant and like post birth, that, you know, I'd really would like just having that additional support. Not that I couldn't live on my own. Like, I think I could, but it's kind of a, you know, a great setup in the sense that like, again, because my mom is a really good support system for me, I think having someone, you know, nearby just kind of support me in those first initial months would be good. And then, I don't know, with childcare, I, you know, like I've kind of just like started looking, you know, preliminary into like thinking about, okay, what would that look like for my job? I definitely have to be, it's not a job where I can just like work from home. I think I would have to be creative. I'm hoping my mom's going to retire eventually. So yes. I'm hoping that she can help a little bit partially with childcare. And then obviously I would probably would find a childcare, you know, a daycare yeah. center.
Sounds like you're in a really good place. I think it's interesting. I've talked to other single mothers by choice who have made the decision either before or after their child is born to move in with parents or move super close. Yeah. And yeah. there's kind of this stigma around that, like almost like
there
you feel like you have to explain why. Whereas pretty much all other cultures and times in history, that multi-generational living is the model.
Oh, it's so common.
It makes so much more sense.
Yeah. In China, that's like what everyone does. Like you live with your parents. Like your parents, when you have a baby, usually like the mother-in-law will come, like the mother will come and live with you for the year. It's so common.
You may be the only person in the world who's sad she doesn't have a mother-in-law.
Exactly. And so I don't know. It's just like, it makes sense to have that family support. And I mean, yeah, like long-term for me and my child, do I always envision like this multi-generational living? Probably not. But like, at the same time, like, why not in these first couple of years when I'm needing that support and having that there?
I think it's great that you have it.
I mean,
I live away from family, but not too far. My mom mm-hmm. is about 2 hours away and my dad is about 45 minutes away. And my sisters are kind of in the same area, but that's definitely my, in case of emergency, break glass. Like I'll just move.
Yeah.
If I get myself into something I can't handle, I'll just move. So it is nice to know.
I think it makes sense. And that whole expression, it takes a village, it's really true. You know, like you can't raise children in like these isolated, you know, like you need your support. Whether that support comes from people who you've designated as family that aren't necessarily family, but like children need to be loved by a community of people. And so I just feel like it's really important. I mean, I don't have things figured out. I will say like, it's scary because I've, you know, read about like single moms by choice who have said, I paid off all of my debts. I have my own house. I have everything like figured out. Like I definitely am not that. So like, I definitely want to like put that disclaimer out there. And sometimes I feel maybe that's bad. And maybe that's like, oh my gosh, maybe I should wait more. But at the same time, I don't feel like there's ever a perfect time having a baby.
Yeah, I agree. There's a certain element of just, you just got to jump and hope that you know, the parachute inflates behind you. Part of what's been hard for me is that there was that initial plunge into, okay, I'm just going to do it. And then struggling mm-hmm. to conceive and going through a much longer path than I anticipated. It's like, there's the initial decision, but then there's also the every month. Okay. Am I still trying? Am I going to keep going? And am I still in this? And so it's not just one decision. It's sort of a series of decisions. And each time you have to decide, you know, how much more money am I going to put in? How much more time? How much more emotional bandwidth do I have? Do I need to take a break? I hope for you that the path is much shorter and easier. And I believe that it probably will be, but.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I also know, I mean, infertility is real and I'm sorry that you've had to, you know, go through your journey, but I think it makes you a stronger person, if anything, you know, at the end of the day that you're able to share this, you know, and you're able to share your experiences with other people so that you give them hope, you know, that
definitely
you can get through anything.
Well, so on that note, my goal with this podcast is to help other women navigate through these choices and really land in a place where they feel like they made the choice from a place of freedom and empowerment versus being stuck or being desperate or feeling like this was the last resort. I think that this is such a beautiful choice, but I think it's one that a lot of women come to after a lot of heartache. And so I'm just wondering if you have any advice or words of wisdom or encouragement for women who are maybe still struggling or still trying to make the decision for themselves.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I mean, I certainly don't think I have any more wisdom than any of the other women out there who are going through this and, you know, who are embarking on this journey. But I guess I can just say, you know, follow your heart and, you know, really follow what you're feeling deep down inside feels right for you. Because at the end of the day, there's no right or wrong choices in this world. And like, if you want to be a parent, I don't think anything should prevent you from going down that journey. And I think my only like advice is surround yourself by people who will support you in this journey, because I think that's huge, right? Like we can't get through this thing we called life without like that
definitely
and that love. And like, I don't know if I would even be at where I am today and talking with you if I didn't at least have support from, you know, my immediate family,
right?
Saying like,
well, and support, we're behind comes you. Support comes from such interesting places. And I think you and I, we connected on Instagram, and I think that mm-hmm. many of us have found this community of support through social media, which is really unexpected. And something that I think it was actually my dad that said this to me when I was thinking about, most of my friends already have children that are older. They're kind of past that baby phase, and maybe they won't be as interested in doing all the baby things with me, you know, going to the playground and doing, you know, all the little kid stuff because they've got big kids. And my dad said, you know, you probably don't even know the people who are going to be the biggest supports to you yet. Like, they're probably not even in your life yet, because you're going to connect with them through this child that you're going to have. You're going to meet them in childbirth classes. You're going to meet them at the daycare, at the playground, you know, and so you'll build a network around you in this new life that you're creating. But I think you're right. It's so important to find the support where you can in your current life. And then if you don't have it, to be intentional about creating it and building it.
No, I agree.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking with us, Gloria.
No, thank you so much for having me on this podcast.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie B. You can learn about me and this project on my website, singlegreatestchoice.com. That's also the place to go if you're interested in being a future podcast guest. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.